The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The process of buying and selling a business can be frightening for the parties involved. What paperwork is needed? What is the true market value of the business? How do you know what transactions are required to be processed in addition to the sale of the business? Welcome to Biz Broker Talk, where you'll find the answers to these questions and much more. Your hosts, Robert Howells and Doug Scheiding, have a decade of experience providing business broker services to large and small businesses. Today, they're ready to help you. Here's Robert and Doug.
Welcome to Biz Broker Talk with Robert Howells.
And I'm Doug Scheiding.
We're owners of Business Brokers of San Antonio and Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio. Any questions, please email them to podcast@bizbrokertalk.com or visit us at bizbrokertalk.com. I'm Robert Howells. I am also a corporate refugee, like a lot of the buyers we work with. I worked at LexisNexis for 7 years in the corporate due diligence arena before purchasing an existing brokerage in 2004 with Doug. My background is in science and engineering, holding positions in the design and sale of custom heating systems and controls to chemical plants before working with Doug and an engineering simulation company. I left there and worked for LexisNexis, calling on Fortune 500 companies in the corporate legal, the compliance, security, and also the business development departments for a four-state area. After that, Doug and I hooked up and purchased a brokerage. Doug?
My name is Doug Scheiding, and I graduated from Texas A&M with an aerospace engineering degree. I've been a part owner of several small businesses over the past 20 years. After college, I started working at a small computer simulation consulting firm that did engineering work and software hardware sales. Grew this from about 3 to 20 employees. That's where Bob and I met early on during our careers. I left that company to open the first direct distribution office for a public company in computer software arena responsible for overall P&L. This model was successful, so the company opened up other direct offices. Before starting our brokerage firm, my last position was head of worldwide sales and marketing for a simulation company specializing in pharmaceutical and aerospace industries.
So we looked, like many buyers, we looked for nearly a year for a business we could work in together, since we enjoyed working with one another, and found business brokerage by chance. Initially, we weren't sure if it was legal. I had, while working at LexisNexis, a gentleman had called in from a brokerage in Louisiana and wanted access to the database, and I began speaking with him and found out about business brokerage, and we investigated and did our own due diligence before acquiring a franchise in the San Antonio area. Today, we're going to discuss what business brokerage is and what it isn't, the history of business brokerage. We're also going to review some common brokerage terms and the services that are provided by business brokerage. We're going to review the process and some things sellers should think about, as well as buyers, about choosing a brokerage, and then some closing thoughts.
In terms of upcoming show topics, we're going to the next show, which will be Christmas Eve, will be preparing your business for sale. So we'll give some tips and guidelines on what a seller or owner of a company can do before going to market and selling their business. Also, the business selling process, buying and selling process in detail. We have a 10-step process for selling a business. Buying versus starting a business. A lot of people coming out of corporate America want to decide whether they need to buy an independent or a franchise type business or a startup business. Financing has been really tough the last couple of years. So we'll go over the financing of a business transaction as it stands today. What's your business worth and third-party valuations? And Bob's favorite, which is due diligence.
In addition, in this program we'll be coming up, we'll be dealing with landlords, Doug's favorite topic. That world, that landscape has changed with the downturn in the economy, and also the issue of co-brokerage. Importance of confidentiality, and who's on your team? Advisors, such as insurance agents and attorneys and accountants and other principal advisors. We're going to talk about insurance, credit, licensing, certificate of occupancy, and we're also going to talk about an issue which is frequently discussed and maybe misunderstood as the stock versus asset sale. Finally, exit planning, the alternatives to selling a business. With that, we're going to have a guest. His name is John Denny. He's an exit planner, a coach, and a facilitator, as well as a consultant. He's written a number of books. Current one out is Hunting in a Farmer's World, about the differences that drive entrepreneurs. He's also written Beating the Boomer Bust and 11 Things You Absolutely Need to Know About Selling Your Business.
And he'll be on starting in January, right, Bob?
Yes, he will. And we'll have an expert from the finance industry discussing the 401k conversions that a lot of corporate refugees like ourselves used in order to acquire their business, a valuation expert that deals with both SBA and conventional valuations, an industry expert in insurance, and a buyer search representative.
Let's talk a little bit about the history of business brokerage. As I was doing a little research on this, I found it very interesting. Our history of what we learn in some of our classes is more the 20 to 30 year time frame. But in doing some research, it looks like business brokerage actually started about 200 years ago in England. They were called business transfer agents. And these people were primarily responsible for real estate and stock certificate transfer of businesses. So they were typically bankers, lenders, and some real estate type agents. But here in the U.S., business brokerage started about in the 1920s or so, and it was primarily real estate agents. Actually, the first broker that I could find was George Wright, and he moved from Florida to California during some of the real estate rush out in California. And he got his son, Russ Wright, to also move to Anaheim, California. And they started up a brokerage there called United Business Investments. And in that was with Tom West. He started up UBI, and he built that up to about 7 offices. He purchased the office of Russ Wright as part of that, who, oddly enough, was his father-in-law. But he grew that to about 7 offices and sold that in 1971 to a public company. Most of the business brokers at that time were independent lone wolves, from the real estate agent. In 1970s, there was about 600 business brokerage firms. We're here local to Texas, and there was only about 10 at that time. However, in 1978 and 79, there were 2 franchises started, and one was from Ed Pendarvis of Sunbelt. He started that in Charleston, South Carolina. And then Tom West, who previously mentioned was with the United Business Investments, he moved to Massachusetts and started the VR Business Brokers. So both of those franchises grew to about 200 or 300. And at least in our near-term history, they're considered the godfathers of the industry. In 1981, there was the formation of the Texas Association of Business Brokers, or TAB as it's called. The first conference was in 83 in Houston, and at that same time, the International Business Brokers Association, or IBBA, was formed. And
that's the organization that we follow. That's where we got most of our education from.
Right. That's exactly correct. IBBA is known throughout the world, U.S. and Canada, and also internationally. And they hold a couple conferences each year. But Texas worked with IBBA. They gave them some of their forms and their education program in 1988. In 1985 is when the first business broker certification was developed, and that's called the BCB. I'm sure there's a lot of, if you check into your own individual state, there's state organizations that are customized for the business brokers in the local area. But that gives you kind of an overview of the history of business brokerage.
Business brokerage, what it is and what it is not. It's not, we're not accountants. We're not attorneys. We're not real estate agents.
And I think some of our business broker brethren would disagree with that for the statement, because certainly some states require you to be a real estate agent, but Texas is not one of those. And there's
only 17 states that are licensed and have licensing requirements. So you need to check with your state to find out whether you're a licensed state or not.
Yeah. Yeah, I think from the standpoint of that's the good and bad about business brokerage, because from the standpoint of anyone can hang up their shingle the next day and say I'm a business broker in those other 43 states.
By and large, it is an unregulated industry. Well, what it is it's a business whereby, for the most part, the broker represents the seller. And they have the similar agency relationships that you would see with a with real estate. That's why in a lot of states it is regulated by the real estate agency. And I would say that the biggest issue that a broker has is to level set expectations between the parties involved, be it buyer and seller, landlord, attorneys, accountants, any licensing agency. It's trying to level set expectations so people understand the process and the time frame. You have the same fiduciary and requirements that you would in many legal representation.
An agency relationship.
Yeah, in the agency relationship. But you do have to know about finance. You got to be knowledgeable about accounting. You have to know some basic legal aspects of business transfer, although you're not there to give legal advice. And you've got to be able to discern through financials, because there's not just one way that books are kept. You've got to be able to discern what's real and how to represent the actual financials to buyers and lenders if, in fact, you are a seller's agent. And if you're a buyer's agent, you've got to be able to interpret accurately those financials, whether it be reviewing the financials from the seller or from a business valuator. There's different types of offices. Most offices, by and large, are individual offices. It's a semi-retired real estate professional or accountant that's moved on to business brokerage. There's also brokerages that are similar to ours that are a boutique office, whereby there may be 2 to 5 brokers in that office. And then there's the large offices. A lot of these are franchise offices that manage a large number of brokers. And sometimes they're large enough that they'll have one broker represent the buyer, another one represent the seller on the same deal, and they'll may have a packaging and marketing team to facilitate the transaction. There's also different types of credentials that people need to be aware of. I would recommend that if you're going to work with a broker, you need to have a broker that has some type of credentialing, that they've gone through a process and that they have been recognized by the credentialing agency, such as CBI, the Certified Business Intermediary, and the BCB.
The BCB, which is from TABB, our local Texas. There's other certifications like a CABA, Certified Advanced Business Analyst. There's a Certified Business Consultant by some other smaller organizations. But by and large, IBBA is the most recognized certification and professional organization for our industry.
Yeah, it takes about 1 to 2 years to, in order to get that certification. And the broker is typically a commission-based provider. I mean, we're commission-based, and so it's our benefit to get a deal closed and to get it closed at a value that's beneficial to both parties. You never want to have a transaction that one party has leverage over another. So you need to know when you take on a project that you need to be able to discern what a true market value is and what you can expect to make to see if that commission is reasonable and willing to take on that assignment.
And typical commissions are 5 to 12% in our industry, depending on the size of the business that's sold. Yeah. And also specializations.
Yeah, you may have someone that just represents restaurants, or you may have someone that just represents veterinarian clinics or a dentist office. They may charge 12 to 15%. But a typical broker is a owner operator. It's a single proprietor.
Did we talk about confidentiality?
Confidentiality is a cornerstone of business brokerage. And that protects the seller so that their employees and customers and vendors do not get nervous. No one likes uncertainty until you know that you have a deal in hand. And that also applies to landlords. We're going to review some of the common brokerage terms. I know this is a bit of a dry segment, but we need to get some of the base terms out of the way. And so some of the common broker terms are things such as Main Street Business Brokerage. Now, Main Street is where we play. We play in the small business transaction, the owner operator. Now there's what they call lower middle market, and that can range from $2 to $5 million in a transaction value. We will typically do 1 to 3 of those a year, but mainly it's the Main Street Business Brokerage, a $300,000, maybe $500,000 transaction to about $2 million. And we like to get about 20 of those to 25 of those transactions done a year to keep our office open and our active.
Well, I think if you ask 10 different brokers what Main Street is, you'd probably get 4 or 5 different answers. Some people think it's 1 million, 2 million, 5 million, 10 million. So I think 2 to 5 million is what's probably considered by IBBA. And in fact, looking at business sales from a market pulse, there's most of the business transactions are of the smaller, probably in the $200,000 to $400,000 range.
Okay. We're about to take a break. So when we come back, we're going to finish a few additional common brokerage terms, and then we're going to discuss the services that a business broker provides.
Comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Business brokerage is a very regional business due to the requirement of having face-to-face buyer and seller meetings. While Robert and Doug are regionally centric to South Central Texas with their brokerage company, Business Brokers of San Antonio, and their equipment appraisal company, Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio, they have also established BizBrokerTalk.com to help assist sellers and buyers with finding professionals in a variety of areas required in the business transaction process. This includes certified business brokers, SBA loan packagers, 401k conversion companies, lenders, as well as other necessary advisory sources. Whether you're selling or buying a business, you need a team of professionals on your side to guide you through the process. Visit BizBrokerTalk.com today. And if you're in the South Texas area, please visit Business Brokers of San Antonio at bbofsa.com or Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio at eaofsa.com.
If you want to know about investing in emerging and frontier markets, or if you have experience in this field but still need to know more, tune in to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. Gavin explores news, current trends, and insights about both categories of investing. His guest experts, along with his own knowledge, will help you stay above the line when it comes to growth potential, whether in funds or equities. He will look at what to invest in and avoid. Tune in to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
This is Biz Broker Talk with Robert Howells and Doug Scheiding. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you may send an email to podcast@bizbrokertalk.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. You're with Robert Howells and my business partner, Doug Scheiding, and we're just reviewing some very basic elements of business brokerage, starting with the common brokerage terms, and then we're going to go on to business brokerage services. We start by talking about Main Street. Main Street is usually defined as transaction values under $2 million, and business brokers will also sometimes transact businesses that are between $2 and $5 million. The next item I think we should probably talk about is EBITDA.
Well, on the Main Street, actually, what I was also going to add is that even within IBBA, the larger transactions, let's say greater than $5 million, that's called mergers and acquisitions. So there's an M&A section of IBBA, but most of the brokers play in the Main Street type businesses.
And the reason being is because of financing.
Financing.
Which is primary reason.
As well as buyers, that's more of an individual buyer market,
right?
Where someone's coming out of, like us,
corporate refugees.
Corporate refugees, going into business for yourself and buying something that's financially manageable without having get it a lot of investors.
Correct.
Okay, EBITDA. A lot of people hear this term. It's
also
called
pronounced EBITDA.
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 Yeah, you'll hear a lot of different variations of it, but Here, with my Southern drawl, I say EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. A lot of this is, you'll hear CPAs talk about it, but that's an adjustment that's done to your net income or the bottom line of the company, and that gives a financial performance of how the business is doing. A lot of those depreciation and amortization, those are non-cash expenses. Depreciation is, for example, if you've got some equipment in your through the IRS, you can depreciate the purchase price over, let's say, a period of 7 to 10 years. Amortization is more of an intangible type asset. So, for example, if you bought a franchise and you paid a franchise fee,
$25,000.
Yeah, typical franchise fee maybe $25,000, $35,000. You can amortize that, and that's done over 15 years, as compared to a hard asset, which is typically 3 to 7 years.
And the reason this term is useful is why?
Well, you're adjusting the financial performance, the bottom line of the company, and getting an idea. You also add back the interest, which is if I buy a business or if I own a business, my debt service and situation may be different than yours.
So you own the business. You've owned it for 20 years. You've got no loans. You've got no interest. I buy your business. I finance 90% of it. I'm going to have an interest payment. So to make apples and to Apple's comparison in the marketplace, we need to back out interest.
Yeah, interest. And the taxes is backed out because my corporation may be a C-Corp or an S-Corp.
And mine may be an LLC.
Yes, or even a sole prop. sole proprietorship. So the taxes are backed out to try to get more of an apples to apples comparison between the businesses.
So it's really just those numbers are backed out, and to say it in another way, so that a industry professional, be it the bank, buyer's accountant, or broker, can go out and look at market comparables, and then the buyer can add back in what their salary requirements are, what their debt service is, and know if they've got enough, what they call coverage ratio, enough money left over to reinvest in the business.
That leads us into SDE or CF or cash flow, seller's discretionary earnings or cash flow. Basically, that's taking the net income of a business, making your EBITDA adjustments. Then you also back out what the owner's salary is. And that's because I may pay myself one thing, Bob may pay himself another thing. We also back out any one-time expenses. So, for example, if your air conditioning went out and as part of your lease you're responsible for that and you pay $10,000, that's going to affect your bottom line. So that's backed out as a non-recurring type expense. And then the next thing that are backed out or recasted or normalized is discretionary type expenses. And that's discretionary for business brokerage. We're not IRS agents. We're not auditing you. Part of the advantage of owning a small business is being able to write off expenses, which are mostly partially related to business.
The car allowance, the groceries if you own a restaurant.
Jimmy Johnson's boat in Florida that I'm sure he writes off as part of his business expenses.
True. Some business owners get pretty egregious with this. A lot don't want to touch that for fear of audit. And there's all variations of what accountants believe is reasonable and what advantages owners take. But you have to identify those because that is a cash benefit ownership. Doug might have had a lake house and shared a boat and had vacations on there, and I might buy the business and I'm not going to do any of those shenanigans. And so I need to know what cash benefits he had that I'm not going to take, because that can go to my bottom line.
Yeah, you want to kind of keep those somewhat to a minimum from the standpoint of having a clean financials. I mean, we've seen everything from paying family members that don't work in the business to having charging off the marketing race car type expenses where the owner went out on the weekend. Yeah. So you can just see all kinds of things in that area. Yeah. The key to that is probably if the buyer has to get financing, is whether the bank is actually going to take those add backs as being something that's a necessary part of the businesses or not.
Right. So I know this is kind of a dry area of the show right now, but please understand that we're going to have these PowerPoint will be provided on our website for your review after the show.
So on the recasting and normalizing, any of those expenses that are added back need to be supportable. So as a seller of a business, if you're stating that you've got a family member that works in the business, you need to have the W-2s for that family member.
It's got to be verifiable and supportable. Otherwise, it's not an add back. If it's cash, which is probably the worst one we see that any brokerage sees, if it didn't get reported, you took it once and you're not going to get it at the sale of the business.
Exactly. Part of our CBI or Certified Business Intermediary training through IBBA, we have actually a two-day course on recasting, and there's a test at the end of the 2 days, and it's probably one of the core courses that we take as part of the 68 hours that we have for earning our CBI. But this is actually an important topic. Business brokers that are true professionals will correspond to the format from the IBBA and what you learn in that course. That leads us into multiples. Typically, you'll hear someone's going to wants to get 5 times multiple for their business?
No, how it starts out is they had a friend that sold their plumbing company and got five times multiple. They've heard their multiple from some friend of theirs that, or from their accountant about what someone else got for their business.
Exactly. Or in insurance agents.
Oh, yeah.
Agents. So is it five times commission? Is it five times the EBITDA number that we talked about earlier? Or is it, in some sellers think it's five times revenue. I don't really know of a business that's five times revenue. Maybe Facebook or
very few businesses.
Google.
Just as if you just want a rule of thumb, a basic rule of thumb is very few Main Street businesses sell for one times or greater revenue.
And the ones that do are primarily service businesses.
Have contracts, licensing.
Have contracts, but also don't have cost of goods. If you're in retail, for example. If you're in retail selling clothes, anything related to the general public, typically there's a two times markup. So your cost of goods is anywhere from 40 to 50, maybe 60% of your bottom line. Obviously, that type of business isn't going to sell for one times revenue. Yeah. Most probable sales price is a term that you'll hear from business brokers. That's coming up with their pricing opinion of what they think the most probable sales price is for your business. And we generally develop that by looking at both the top line and the bottom line. Again, taking a multiple off the revenue and a multiple off your bottom line. Bottom line being the SDE, seller's discretionary earnings or cash flow. So historically, that's been about 2.3 off the bottom line.
For all businesses, across all industries, since the early 1960s, the multiple of adjusted earnings or seller's discretionary earnings is 2.3, and that does not vary much at all year to year.
No, and that multiple actually will vary by industry.
Yep. Some may be one times, some may be five times that adjusted earnings. So that's why you need to look at a number. You maybe get a business valuation, which we'll talk about in one of our shows, but certainly you need to talk to a broker, someone that actually handles transactions. What about fair market value versus book value?
Most accountants think in terms of book value.
As do lenders.
True. Fair market value is important to both a buyer and seller. From the standpoint of most of our transactions are asset sales. And so when I buy the assets of the business, I'm buying the assets at fair market value, not at book value. So your book value is going to be what's in your balance sheet as calculated by your CPA, again, using that depreciation that we mentioned earlier.
So you may have a straight line depreciation or accelerated depreciation schedule. So that $100,000 worth of equipment is now worth nothing, or maybe it's worth $30,000. If it's a stock sale, the buyer would be assuming that balance sheet. If it was an asset sale, well, you would have to determine what the fair market value of that business is.
And our other company that we have, Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio, that we are certified machinery and equipment appraisers, and we do that for companies and as well as lenders.
Yeah, it's a good segue there.
Well, we forgot to mention that in the intro from the standpoint of we go out and on-site and do review of equipment and come up with the fair market value as well as ordinary liquidation value and forced liquidation. But that's part of our equipment appraising work that we do. IOI, LOI, and OTP. Those are all related to buyers that are interested in a business. Typically on Main Street, you'll have the offers to purchase or OTP. They're contingent offers. Contingent on approval of the financials of the business, getting an acceptable non-compete, training and transition from the previous owner, and financing.
Yeah, if there's a franchisor, if there's a franchisor involved.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And then landlord getting an acceptable lease. And then on larger type transactions, you'll get companies more. This will probably be more of a corporation buying another one, an IOI or an LOI. an indication of interest, or a letter of intent.
Correct. The IOI is just a less formal form of the LOI, and usually it's LOI is sometimes preceded by an IOI. So, indication of interest.
An IOI is typically non-binding as well. LOI has portions that are binding. On smaller type transactions, the offer to purchase also has an escrow amount that's put down as showing the contractual interest in the business, and that's fairly sizable. I mean, I'd say $5,000 is on the small end, and
usually 10% of the transaction value is commonly seen.
Yes, and because it isn't a contingent offer to purchase, that's refundable if there's something that comes up as part of the buyer's due diligence.
It's whatever's negotiated between buyer and seller. That's convenient for them all. And my favorite, due diligence.
Due diligence.
Due diligence is where you go in and the buyer is able to look under the sheets and verify what's been represented thus far. So if a seller's represented the performance of the business, the buyer gets to go and look at the tax returns, the income statements that support that tax returns, maybe
bank statements.
Bank statements, making sure that they've had insurance enforced. Specifically, you'll find out, you'll want to know about their workman's comp policies and what their rating is, all the certifications, OSHA potentially. So it's really digging in to verify and uncover if there's any known or potentially unknown. Sometimes a seller's owned a business so long and they're so outside the details that they don't know about some of the liabilities that may transfer with the business. So it's a period, maybe a month to 6 weeks, whatever negotiated between the parties to validate what has been represented and understand what is actually being assumed or transferred at closing.
And that's a delicate process from the standpoint of, because like you gave the example of the owner not being actively involved in the business, then he's going to have to rely on a key employee to help gather some of that information and providing that to the buyer as part of the due diligence. So in our typical process, we always want to get the financial portion of the due diligence accomplished as quickly as possible. Listing agreement. This is our favorite. Listing agreement typically are exclusive. We do not want to be competing against the owner of the business and selling the business or other business brokers. And due to the confidentiality, it's almost required to be exclusive.
Depending on the type and size of the deal, the majority of the work can be done up front, just getting the business listed, it's packaging it, getting the financials sorted out, getting what's being transferred. I mean, there's a lot that can go into packaging and listing a business, so you don't want someone to take your work product from a broker standpoint and sell the business and not be able to reap any benefit from your expertise and what you've done. And I guess maybe one of the last terms we want to go back to is the asset versus stock sale. I think that's probably where most people that have never purchased a business before or sold a business have a misunderstanding. We'll talk about the asset aspect of it.
Yeah, the asset sales, 98% of what we do is an asset sale. Only rarely, once in a blue moon, does it become a stock sale. So asset sales, basically you're buying the assets at the fair market value. There's an allocation of purchase price. And that allocation will include two bad words called goodwill. Bankers often refer to it as blue sky, which is different. But goodwill is the intangible asset of the branding, the branding of the business, the name of the business, the customers in place.
Yeah, and so when we come back, we're going to finish up with the difference between an asset sale and a stock sale, and then talk about business brokerage services.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Business brokerage is a very regional business due to the requirement of having face-to-face buyer and seller meetings. While Robert and Doug are regionally centric to South Central Texas with their brokerage company, Business Brokers of San Antonio, and their equipment appraisal company, Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio, they have also established BizBrokerTalk.com to help assist sellers and buyers with finding professionals in a variety of areas required in the business transaction process. This includes certified business brokers, SBA loan packagers, 401k conversion companies, lenders, as well as other necessary advisory sources. Whether you're selling or buying a business, you need a team of professionals on your side to guide you through the process. Visit BizBrokerTalk.com today. And if you're in the South Texas area, please visit Business Brokers of San Antonio at bbofsa.com or Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio at eaofsa.com.
Bob Pritchard has over 30 years of experience as a straight-talking business consultant and author working with some of the top Fortune 500 companies. Now he's come to the Voice America Business Channel to help you and your business. Tune in to the Bob Pritchard Radio Show for information about starting and successfully running a profitable business. From the movers and shakers to great marketing screw-ups, you can't afford to miss a single edition of the Bob Pritchard Radio Show, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
This is Biz Broker Talk with Robert Howells and Doug Scheiding. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you may send an email to podcast@bizbrokertalk.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. I'm Robert Howells, and we're here with my business partner, Doug Scheiding, and we're reviewing the difference between asset versus stock sale. Let's kind of review the asset sale again, Doug.
Again, 98% of what we do is asset sales, and that's where you're buying the assets of the business. Typically, a buyer wants to do that because on the stock sale, they are, number one, inheriting the book value of the assets. So if you've got a construction business that's been in business for 10, 15 years, all of their assets are fully depreciated. And if you're looking at a stock sale, you're going to inherit that. An asset sale, you're buying it at the fair market value. Also, from a buyer perspective, usually you're not interested in the known and unknown liabilities of the previous owner. So if you buy the stock, you're inheriting that.
And some liabilities could be age discrimination, sexual harassment, slip and fall. I mean, could it be if you may drive a dry cleaner, it may be a environmental issue. I mean, it can be all sorts of things.
Yeah, from the standpoint of known and unknown, it may not have even surfaced by the time of the sale, and it happens after the sale. From a seller perspective, it's actually very important as well. From the tax consequences, the asset and stock sale have different tax consequences in this, and they should talk to their CPA about what that how that may affect them.
Correct. Unless your broker's a CPA, they should not be giving you tax advice.
Yeah. We are not giving tax advice.
Certainly
or
not
legal advice
for that. No. So, you know, we're going to continually touch on these common brokerage terms. You'll hear them throughout the forthcoming shows. So let's talk about brokerage services. You know, a lot of brokers have been around long enough, and there's brokers out there that have been doing business two and three times as long as we have, and they've kind of specialized. And some may just do provide a pricing opinion. You know, those services may be from a seller's representation standpoint. They may just provide what the most probable selling price of a business. We'll be visiting with a gentleman that will also be doing exit planning. And so some of the different strategies brokers take may influence, will influence the buyer or seller based on their experience. But the most probable selling price or a broker's pricing opinion is done several ways. any appraisal, where it's real estate appraisal, machine equipment appraisal, or business valuation, they follow the USPAP standards that were set up after the savings and loan crisis in the 1980s. And so those are the same types of approaches they take to valuing whether it's real estate. So let's talk about real estate for a second so that you can understand the similarities. Real estate, you commonly heard, if you buy a home, and talk about dollars per square foot, and how they come up with that is they look at market comparables. They look at what a similar home in the neighborhood sold for. If it's commercial real estate, you know, they may talk about what that real estate is able to produce. They've got a strip shopping center. It's got five lease spaces in them. Four of them are leased out, and this is the revenue it produces for the owner. And then there's the income approach.
Well, the income, yeah, the income approach. What a business broker does is more of a market approach. And we use one method in that particular approach, which is called the DM or the direct market data method. And that's where you're going from the standpoint of comparable to real estate, where your real estate agent looks at comparable
Correct.
Homes that have sold and comes up with a pricing for your home. But in the same way, you don't expect your real estate agent to do a valuation. That's a conflict of interest. You have an appraiser, you have an appraisal that's done. In business brokerage, that's the same way. A broker doesn't do the valuation of the company or shouldn't. And we just use one method in the appraisal process.
And it's validated with the income approach. I mean, you want to look at what the business will kick off. So in other words, a broker should go out, and we have access to three different databases of like business sales. So similar to real estate, where the real estate agent's trying to give the seller of the house their market comparables. This house like yours or five of them that sold in the last 6 months, this is what the market comps are on a dollars per square foot. Business brokers going out, look at market comparables for that ice cream shop or that auto repair center that have sold in a similar price range in the last year, and this is what the sales price was. This is how much the seller carried in a note. This is how much the assets were that transferred.
Average inventory.
And so you're looking to see how the business that's being sold compares to that. That is one method. You also go out and talk to lending to find out, hey, are there any lenders that are willing to participate in this transaction? And if so, under what terms? And third, you look and see what else is currently on the market. And from those things, this is where the art comes in. A broker has to look at and say, okay, this is the most probable selling price with the highest value being what an owner, is a price whereby the debt service from the, you subtract from the cash flow of the business, the debt service of acquiring it, what from the discussion they had with the financing entity, the bank or whatnot, how much a buyer is going to need to take home. That's going to vary, but you can look at different sites to see what a typical owner of that type business takes home. And then you need to have a coverage ratio. You have to have enough money left over to reinvest in the business. Right now, I think we're hearing banks are wanting a 30% coverage ratio. And that's pretty much the most you can get for it. But the most probable selling price is going to have a lot of other factors, competition in the marketplace, how hard it is to replicate it. And so that's what a broker comes up with. That's the value a broker brings that an accountant's not going to have access to and a lender doesn't see enough of to be able to advise.
In those databases that we use, we search by SIC or the NAICS code, and that's how we get businesses that are very similar to the one that we're speaking about. And there's databases out there called BizComps, PrattStats, PeerComps, and several databases that a broker can use. An external valuation or a third-party valuation actually looks at three different approaches, the asset approach, the income approach, and then also the market approach. So a business broker is only really taking into one of those approaches and one method in that approach.
But they test it against another approach. I mean, there's a validation that's using the income.
An appraiser is going to do that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we'll have a show on third-party valuations and plan on having a guest that is from a nationally respected firm in an upcoming show.
There's also the second thing that a broker does after they determine the value of the value of the business is the marketing document creation, because it's a confidential transaction. You don't want to say who they are, where they're at, because no one likes uncertainty. The employees don't like uncertainty. The vendors don't like uncertainty because the business could be put on a COD, and landlords don't like uncertainty for sure. So the confidentiality comes into play. And so the marketing document has to be skillfully created so it doesn't say who you are or where you're at, but it needs to give enough information so that a potential buyer can glean from the information if they're interested or not. So generally where it's located, what the revenue is, what the cash flow is, how many employees,
how many years in business,
what are the hours,
highlighting some of the positive aspects of the business.
Highlighting the positive aspects of the business, a good way of putting it. Then there's also the ability to actually create the deal book. Now, the deal book is once a buyer has been registered or signed a confidentiality agreement, then this deal book's provided to them, and it provides the details of the business, where they are, who they are, their strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, photos of the business, and any pertinent information. A broker services also screens the buyers. We don't qualify buyers. We do screen them. Buyer needs to represent they have the wherewithal to potentially acquire the business. They need to represent what direct industry experience they may have, because that influences lending. They need to sign a confidentiality agreement and understand disclosure will cause irreparable harm to the owner of the business for those aforementioned reasons. So the screening of the buyers is an important thing that a broker does. I guess if you've ever tried to sell your car online, you can understand some of the challenges a broker faces with potential buyers. And also there's deal management between the parties. Sometimes you have multiple buyers and multiple sellers on the same transaction that might not have the same interest that you need to manage. You have a lender involved, or maybe multiple lenders. You have a landlord. You have advisors to both the buyer and the seller. So the broker needs to be able to coordinate between all those parties. And again, level set expectations, manage the process. And
personalities. Sometimes we have to manage the personalities between the buyer and the seller.
Once a deal is in place, actually throughout the process, it's really, as Doug says, it's a psychological maze that a business sale goes through. We need to recognize that 90% of business transactions happen without a broker involved. And that's important because we know that majority of transactions happen in a close geographic proximity or industry proximity. So most businesses, the buyer and the seller have known each other, might have known each other for years. Maybe dad selling it to daughter or son, this plumbing company in town is selling to that plumbing company in town. And it's statistically known that those aren't really great deals because we've seen deals that have fallen apart that were negotiated between parties, and we typically get 10 to 30% more in the next transaction that we represent for taking care of a lot of issues for both parties that really gleans the value of the business. So deal management, having a qualified business broker or business intermediary is that's where they really earn their fee. And lastly, the brokers don't negotiate. They're seller's reps typically, and they aren't negotiating the transaction.
Yeah, we represent the seller, and a lot of times we actually act as a buffer. When we get an offer to purchase, for example, and we present it to the seller, we always tell them, even if it's a full price offer, think about it overnight. And Because what happens is no two offers are the same. Just went through this last week where we got three offers within a couple of days for a particular business. And I asked the seller to think about it overnight. And in the end, the next day, and a better offer came in with better terms. Even if someone gives you full price for your business, let's say $250,000, I might give you $200,000 upfront and have you finance $50,000. So the terms and structure of the offer can be different, even if the actual overall dollar value is the same.
And I think probably another service that business brokers provide is buyer representation. Mainly what you've heard us speak about in Main Street and lower middle market is seller representation, because by and large that's what sellers are doing. Buyer representation is a different animal. We do provide that service, but what a buyer, and there's a lot of brokers now that are extensively doing buyer searches. And what that is it's being able to have an agreement, agency agreement, with a non-exclusive, typically, with the buyer to source out a transaction. We've done work for a foreign corporation to acquire a manufacturing plant in the United States several times.
A software company.
We've worked with a internet hosting company. So closing thoughts for today is buyers typically have
they have two questions, and we will go over that in our next show, which will be Christmas Eve.
Yes, our next show will be Christmas Eve. We're going to review finish up with buyer representation. We'll talk about selecting a business broker and review an example 10-step process, as well as some other terms.
We appreciate you listening today. Again, if you have questions, email us at podcast@bizbizbrokertalk.com.
Or visit our website at www.bizbizbrokertalk.com. Thank you for listening and look forward to speaking with you next week.
Thank you again for joining us today for Biz Broker Talk. Please join Robert and Doug again next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. After today's show, we hope you are one step closer to a successful sale of your business.
The information and ideas provided in this show are intended for educational purposes only and not intended as investment advice. The hosts of the show do not provide legal or tax advice. You should consult with your tax or legal professional regarding your individual situation. No information should be interpreted as securities advice. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, and investment professional. While we have endeavored to ensure the accuracy of the information in this program, we do not guarantee or give warranty as the accuracy, timeliness, and completeness of any information.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Hi, I'm Ed Krell, CEO of Destination Maternity. We proudly support the March of Dimes work to reduce the rate of premature birth. The numbers have gone down.